All right, away we go with the program. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Hope you're enjoying your summer. Thank you for being here. A lot of things to unpack. The one and only Ryan Hickey, the executive producer, is on a well-deserved vacation. So, Scar, I love that. Nico Scarlatos and Scar10 over on the social media is filling in today. We'll visit with him later in buy or sell. Phone number the same, 888-710-4ISN. You can hit me up on X, Sports Writer, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Kirk Cousins has some regrets and has spoken about them, and we will let you listen later in the show. There was yesterday at Wimbledon, this isn't really a tennis story, it's a sports heartache story. One of the saddest, most heartbreaking things I've seen in any sport in a really long time. We will talk about that. I will visit with Tony Gwynn Jr. in a little bit. Padres analyst, longtime major leaguer. I'm going to try to dive into who the next Sam Darnold's going to be. We talk every year, and we should, in the NFL about what team, because inevitably there's always one or two, surprises us, makes a push in the positive direction we didn't see coming. I suppose, top of my head, Commanders were probably that team last year. But every season, and these can correlate, we have a quarterback or two who go from being a bum to at least momentarily a star. It was Darnold last year in Minnesota. I'm going to try to hone in on who the candidates are to be this year's Sam Darnold. And here's a little teaser. It could be Sam Darnold. He, I think, still has to prove that he's the real deal again this year in Seattle. And I don't usually get into controversial non-sports topics on the show, right? You can do that somewhere else. But I will dive into what apparently is the buzziest, most controversial topic in America, the new Superman movie, ? Why is this a big deal? Anyway, I'm going to try to understand it. Maybe Nico will help me. We'll do buy or sell. We'll hit a bunch of stuff. Andrew Bogus will give us updates. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Every few days in the NBA free agency cycle, someone gets even richer than they were before. I mean, do you really care deep down that Paolo Banchero, who's a very, very good player for the Orlando Magic, is going to be a multi-millionaire instead of a multi-millionaire before? Maybe you do. Five-year extension, $239 million guaranteed. It could reach as much as almost 290 based on some incentives. But the takeaway here, and it's under the radar, is that this Magic team may be poised to actually be really competitive next year. So here's what I'm going to do, coming off the Banchero news. The extension for the youngish player for the Magic. Here's the other takeaway. This doesn't apply to me. God bless my son and the genes that I've given him. If you are a good enough athlete that your children have the outside chance of being professional athletes. I live in this super obnoxious community here in L.A. where everybody is a former athlete or super rich and they want their kids to be athletes. Push them to the NBA. The money's insane. Think about how Paolo Banchero is the, I don't know, what is Banchero? The 24th best player in the NBA? I'm not even sure. That is Patrick Mahomes level money that he's making. He's making almost a third of $1 billion. But let me make the case here for the Orlando Magic, a team that has not, this is basically the Steelers of the NBA, minus the winning seasons and minus any kind of offense. But there's a case here, and this extension, I think, highlights the fact that in an NBA that is amorphous and that is changing and that is nebulous and that doesn't really have clear-cut absolute contenders year to year, other than maybe the Thunder, the Magic could be poised to be the team that makes a big leap next year. And the first thing they have to do, and I think they'll get there, is just to have their team be healthy. It's not a big three, and big three don't exist anymore. The new model, we know this from the Thunder. We saw this from the Pacers. I think it'll be true for the Knicks. It was absolutely the case for the Celtics before they had to tear this thing down because of the Jason Tatum injury, is you have to have depth. Now, as a part of that depth, you want excellence. Nobody's looking for seven guys that are B minuses, but you can't just stack your team with two or three dudes that are an AA plus and then have a bunch of losers, a bunch of failures. You can't. You've got to have depth, and obviously in that mix you want players as good as you can have. And they have that in Orlando. Banchero's a very good player. Franz Wagner's a very good player. Jalen Suggs a very good player. They have Desmond Bane coming in. But the first three guys that I mentioned, Paolo, Franz, Jalen, were all injured last year. Wagner played the most games of any of those guys. He played 60. Paolo Banchero, who just got this extension, and he should, this rookie max extension, played 46 games. Jalen Suggs couldn't even get to the halfway mark. He played in 35 games. So just the idea returned to the norm that these guys should be healthy. It felt like bad luck. It's not like we're talking 33-year-olds. It's not a 40-year-old LeBron James. It's not Anthony Humpty Dumpty Davis. It's not Kyrie Irving. It's not guys coming off ACL or MCL injuries. Just a team that had bad luck last year. That's number one. This is also a defense, and defense isn't sexy, and it's not interesting, and it doesn't create a bunch of highlights, and what really dominates a lot of our sports talk now are the shows, especially out of Bristol, where people go on and scream at each other, just scream at each other for 12 hours, and then in the middle of the NBA Finals talk about whether Dak Prescott's a Hall of Famer. It's not exactly the highest level of discourse, and so maybe in that silliness we can lose track of teams like the Magic, who last year had the second-best defense in the NBA. They were absolutely ridiculously great defensively. And even with these injuries, even with Banchero hurt, even with Wagner hurt, even with Suggs hurt, they were quietly plodding along as a pretty good team. Why? They couldn't score. They were one of the worst offenses in the NBA because they can shut other teams down. If you go back through NBA champions of the last 25 years, it's something like 19 of them had top 10 defenses, and a huge chunk were in the top five. You and the Thunder, by the way, extraordinary defense to the defending champions. Even that Pacers team, who obviously came up short in Game 7 when poor Tyrese Halliburton had that injury, on paper were mediocre defensively. They were 15th, but going back to January 1st, they were 7th. Defense is critical. It's this sort of missing secret ingredient that nobody pays attention to, but you have to have. The Magic have it. There's also the fact, and I mentioned him, that Desmond Bane is coming in addressing the biggest need and the biggest problem that they have had. And this is the thing about the NBA now. And I think it's going to be hard for fans, for sports talk radio hosts who don't know a lot about the league, who maybe just, when they don't know what to do, panic and talk about Aaron Rodgers, don't fully grasp. And that is the old days of the reliable players you can know about in the NBA that you can just talk about are no longer necessarily going to define who's an NBA champion. Just because you have LeBron or Steph or Jokic or Giannis or Luka Doncic to the Lakers, those are the easy things to talk about. And look, I get it. As a fan, know about. They're exciting. Just because they're a part of your team doesn't mean that you're going to have success. I like it. Baseball is approaching, and I'm not talking popularity, just in terms of the strategic approach you have to take to build a team, more like the NFL. And look, this comparison's not perfect, but in the NFL, you have to usually have a quarterback. You have to. You have to have a star in the NBA. But in the National Football League, you can have a quarterback. If you have a bunch of pieces that don't work, if you have a bad offensive line, if your defense sucks, if your front office doesn't know what they're doing, see, I don't know, maybe the Bengals, it doesn't matter if you have Joe Burrow. The NBA is the same. And that means you're going to have guys that have huge impacts that you don't really know a lot about. You're going to have guys that are game changers when put in the right place you never even thought about until they won a championship and you go, oh, Jalen Williams is pretty good. Or even, oh, that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is pretty good. I'm telling you, Desmond Bane can be that kind of a game changer. And maybe the better comp for Bane is Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown doesn't play for the Celtics, doesn't win a championship 2 years ago. Nobody knows who he is as a casual sports fan. But this is a Magic team that were 23rd in the number of three-point shots they took last year. That is one of the metrics of modern offense. And they were dead last. There's 30 teams in the NBA. They were 30th in the percentage of three-point shots they made. This was a great defense with some actual great offensive players, but not shooters. But they couldn't stretch the floor, which means you could double up on Wagner. You could pack the paint. Suggs wasn't really in there to run the offense. Banchero is not necessarily efficient. They needed guys to stretch the floor. The addition of Desmond Bane, who they just got from Memphis, is huge. This guy's a 41% career three-point shooter. So again, not sexy. I'm not talking about whether or not Dak Prescott is going to be the fifth greatest quarterback in the history of the sport, but this is the story of the day in sports, and it could be significant 9-10 months from now when the Magic are potentially atop the Eastern Conference. And maybe the biggest case for the Magic, and I'm not alone in this, by the way. Vegas, I was just in Vegas two of the last three weekends, and if you haven't been there, you got to go. My brother was there for the World Series of Poker, was there for 3 weeks, and then got stuck there. It's one of those places when you arrive, it's the greatest place ever. When they cancel your flight, you want to pull your hair out. They built the Magic of Las Vegas on understanding sports better than most of us. And so when the odds come out, when they put their finger on the pulse of what they think is happening, we should pay attention. The Magic have the third best odds to come out of the East next year. And part of that, maybe the biggest argument I could make for the Orlando Magic, with Boncaro's extension highlighting this team's going to be good, is the fact that the East is decimated. It's brutal. And even the teams that have the opportunity for excellence, and the Magic are one of them, have huge question marks. There is no certainty the way that it feels like there is with the Thunder. And by the way, the Thunder weren't certain entering this year either. They became certain as the season unfolded. Top team in the East, best team in the East is Cleveland. And if I have to take a team next year, do the predictions, I'll probably take the Cavs to come out of the East. Here's the thing. Donovan Mitchell's been really unreliable in the playoffs. We don't need to dwell on this, but Cleveland, as a frontrunner, tells you it's wide open. The next best team, I think, is the New York Knicks. And I don't know if Mike Brown's going to be the guy. Mike Brown, new head coach in New York, announced last week, made official yesterday, when Leon Rose, you know, from his cave or wherever he hides, put out some terse statement. I like Mike Brown. Great offensive mind. Not necessarily a great defensive coach. He has not had massive success, and he's not been a winner when he hasn't had LeBron James as the guy that he coaches. He just hasn't. And then you go to an Indiana Pacers team that we knew Halliburton was going to be out. They just announced Kevin Pritchard, the GM. Halliburton's not going to play at all this next year. And then where do you look? Do you believe in the Atlanta Hawks? I don't. Do you believe in a Celtics team that's had to dismantle some of their pieces and doesn't have Jason Tatum? I do not. Do you want to go to the Miami Heat or somebody else I should be talking about? I don't think so. You might want to buy into the Milwaukee Bucks. I know Bart Winkler does, but I think Doc Rivers is a terrible coach. All of this positions the Magic to have the opportunity to actually be good, to actually make a push, to actually be excellent. And then you throw in the fact they kind of fit the model of the teams that have won lately. Remember, we're now at 8 straight seasons with a different NBA champion. That does not mean that it's going to not be the Thunder or that it won't be a regular team that we sort of are used to. But we have walked into this world, Adam Silver put it together and created this world, where you can have some surprises in who your NBA champions are. And the model to do that is young team, check for the Magic. Good coach, I think Jamal Mosley's a very good coach, check for the Magic. A team that's on the rise, absolutely. A team that does something really, really well and then makes a leap. The Cavs were the same thing last year, by the way. Cavs last year, I'm talking a year ago, or I guess 2 years ago, were third or second in defense, were okay in offense. They made that offensive leap last year. I'm not saying the Magic are going to go from the 27th offense to the second best offense, but if they can go from the 27th best offense to the 10th best offense, there's a world where they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. And having Boncaro and having Wagner and having Suggs locked in. By the way, those guys are under contract to 2030. And having Desmond Bane and having a defensive identity, it adds up to the potential for greatness. And let me frame Boncaro this way, okay? Just to give you a sense of like his excellence. LeBron James, who's going to be 41, this also highlights how ridiculously good LeBron is. What is LeBron? If I told you LeBron is a top what player in the NBA, you might say 15? 9? 12? He's good, right? He's really good. LeBron last year was 24-8-8. Boncaro was 26-8-5. Not quite the same assist numbers, but remember, it's a poor shooting team. And if you watch Magic games like I did, you would see Boncaro have some nice vision, and then guys just brick threes, because again, they're the worst shooting three-point team in the NBA. And the thing about Boncaro is that most of these guys make big leaps in year 3, 4, 5, especially as they get the right pieces around them. This is a really good team. And even though there's not a lot going on, I know there's not a lot going on, we are opening with the Orlando Magic, I get it. The news that the Magic have locked up another one of their young stars to a massive deal, with the Desmond Bane addition, and the fact that we presume Wagner and Suggs and Boncaro are going to be healthy, and the fact that this is a team that made the playoffs and while they lost in the first round, to the Celtics, showed a little bit of heart and spunk, and the fact they already have this basis for defense, and the fact that we're in an NBA where parity matters, and therefore you got to have some consistency to kind of break through, and the fact the East, forgive my French, earmuffs for your kids, the East sucks next year. It does. It's bad. There's an opportunity for this news for the extension that Orlando gave one of their young stars to also be the lightning bolt that came in advance of the sign that this is going to be an absolute competitor. I love the Magic next year. There you go. There's my case for Orlando. Orlando, there's all your love. Who says we only talk about the Cowboys on the show? 888. I hate the Cowboys. Hate's not true. They're just not very good. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number if you want to call in, talk about whatever you want. If anybody, well, I guess it's out today. If anybody has seen this Superman movie or just can explain to me why people are pissed off about it, it's good, it's bad, who cares? It's a movie. Who cares if it's, all right, we're going to get into it. I don't really understand it. I also want to talk about Kirk Cousins and a guy at Wimbledon, because there's a double whammy reminder that as much as these athletes make a lot of money and they have presumably pretty great lives, the sports are arbitrary and can be unfair. And there's no better example of this than what happened yesterday in London and what Kirk Cousins said in a documentary. We'll get into both those things next here on Right of the New. All right, welcome back into the show. Happy Tuesday. Bill Ryder with you, whether you are delivering mail in Kentucky or hanging out in Riverside, California, or listening in Pittsburgh. Thank you for being here. Speaking of which, we've got a call at 888-710-4ISN in Pittsburgh. Andy, appreciate you, pal. You're back on Right of the New.
Hey, pal. I like to see you do a Bob Gibson tractor like you did the Aaron Judge 400 tracker. Well, some of these pitchers, especially Paul Skeens here in Pittsburgh, he may not get all the way to it, but I think he can get close with Bob Gibson's 1.12 ERA. I mean,
that's a good idea, dude. You like a little ERA record tracker, you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, when Ryan gets back from vacation, maybe I'll try to remember to get that in there. Skeens has been, he's absolutely mesmerizing and amazing. And I'm one of these weirdos. Maybe I'm not a weirdo. Maybe I'm a traditionalist. I don't know. I don't mind home runs. I don't mind offense. I'm obsessed with the cycle. I'm obviously obsessed with 400 because we went through the Aaron Judge tracker. So much fun every day. But if I can go to if I'm going to the ballpark, if I'm going to Dodger Stadium here in L.A., or I'm going to watch the Angels play, which I won't do anymore because there's no Shohei. But let's say I did, or I go to Wrigley Field when I'm in Chicago. I would rather see a gem from a pitcher for whatever reason. I'd rather see a 2-1 or 1-0 pitching duel than see a 10-9 slugfest. That's just me. Nico Scarlatos is filling in today, hanging out. Nico, are you? And there's no wrong answer. Would you rather see a bunch of home runs or a Skeens-esque outing? If you're watching,
I think it's hard to disagree that the home run party is a lot more exciting. But I will say, as a Mets fan, I've been to a lot of Jacob deGrom starts, and it was awesome watching him deal. So I definitely have a love for that, too.
I mean, I think some of it for me is because my formative years as a baseball fan came when I was in high school watching the Cubs not quite win that Bartman World Series, and they had Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor were the two linchpins of that. And I remember it wasn't on TV that day. God, I sound like I'm 90. I had to listen on the radio to the game where Kerry Wood struck out whatever it was, 20. It was one of the rare games where it wasn't on WGN. And so maybe that's why I'm obsessed. I love pitching duels. Skeens is incredible. When Kershaw was doing his thing, Maddox. All right, well, Andy in Pittsburgh, we will try our best to do that. Before we get to the sports, very quickly, and I don't know if you're into any of this stuff. I am a casual superhero movie fan. I don't read comic books, but I like the Marvel movies. I'll go to a movie. I like going to movie theaters. I'm going to go to F1. We talked about this, I think, yesterday. My X timeline is ravaged by people arguing about Superman before it came out. And then it appears the embargo on reviews was lifted at midnight. And the reviews look pretty good, but people are just so, are you a Superman guy? Can you explain this to me?
I'm with you. I'm a Marvel guy. So once you go over and cross that line over to DC, you lose me a little bit. I mean, I obviously have seen the original Supermans and Batman movies, but I don't know. Are people saying that the movie's not going to be good? Are they pissed at the reviews that said that it was going to be good?
So there's a lot. There's some disagreement. There was a bunch. Somebody let their review come out that said it was bad early when they weren't supposed to. And then everybody was outraged, that person, and said, oh, the movie's awful. And then all the new reviews came out, and it's supposed to be good. But then people are saying, I don't know, man. It's weird. It's weird comic book drama. Speaking of drama, I don't dislike Kirk Cousins. I make fun of him a lot. I mean, I've named him Kissing Cousins because having him as your quarterback is like kissing your cousin. I don't know. I've never kissed my cousin, but it seems like this analogy works. Seems like a good idea till you do it. The Back to the Future line, it just feels weird, right? Doesn't feel right. But he seems like a nice enough guy. And I can't pretend to have spent much time around any active quarterbacks in my career outside of a scrum in a locker room. But I happened to be around Kirk a lot the year that the Super Bowl was in Minnesota. I was there for this radio show. and just randomly, you know, where's Waldo's? Where's Kirk? I would go to the restroom. He would be there. I would go to the Krispy Kreme line. He would be in line next to me. I went to Imagine Dragons, the concert. He was dancing. It was weird. He seemed like a very nice dude. That doesn't make him a successful quarterback in clutch moments. We know all these things. But when he went to Atlanta for a $100 million deal, and he was presumably the guy coming off an injury and left the Vikings, right decision or wrong decision, $100 million sure seemed like a commitment to Kirk Cousins that he was going to be the QB. And if you remember this, in that upcoming draft, when, you know, with I think it was the 10th pick that the Falcons had, you thought, okay, maybe they're going to draft an offensive lineman or get crazy and draft a wide receiver, whatever it is, to help Cousins be successful. And remember, this was a Falcons team that were in a bad division, had some weapons, had drafted a lot of skills players at the top of the draft in the years that preceded that. They felt like they were primed to be what I was talking about earlier, one of these surprises. And they called the name Michael Penix Jr., who, by the way, as you probably know, quarterback. He's a quarterback. And it was bizarre. And on a Netflix documentary, this Netflix quarterback show that they do, which is coming out. Is it out now, Nico? Or is it coming out? It's out?
The first episode came out last night.
All right. Episode one out last night. I want to give you credit where it's due, Netflix. Maybe in the most candid response yet, Cousins talked about how taken back he was by that situation.
Wasn't expecting us to take a quarterback so high. At the time, it felt like I had been a little bit misled, or certainly if I had the information around free agency, it certainly would have affected my decision. I had no reason to leave Minnesota with how much we loved it there if both teams were going to be drafting a quarterback high. But I've also learned in 12 years in this league that you're not entitled to anything. It's all about being able to earn your spot and prove yourself.
I like the music underneath, by the way. I like, because that one's not, it's not too overbearing. Sometimes it is. Look, he was misled. And it is a business, and you do have to perform. And he didn't. I mean, he did not play the level. He looked old, and he looked like he was coming off the injury he was coming off of. And I was thinking about this in the context of how unfair life is, and it reminded me of what happened yesterday at Wimbledon. And yes, I play tennis, but this isn't even a tennis story. I mean, I'm not really a tennis expert. I know like seven guys in that tour. But there's a guy, to write it down, named Grigor Dimitrov, who's older, was supposed to be a star, wasn't able to really get to the level he wanted to, and he was on the verge of beating the number one player in the world, Jannik Sinner, yesterday. I was watching the match because there's nothing going on in the world, and he was playing some of the most inspired tennis I've seen anybody play against a world number one. He was up 2-0. It's the first to win 3 sets at Wimbledon. Sinner was playing well. It's just this Dimitrov guy was just playing incredible tennis. And the road is fairly open right now. It looked like he had an opportunity to maybe make a deep run toward the end of his career. For whatever reason, the people who play professional tennis obsess over Wimbledon. It is it's the Masters of tennis. It's you know, maybe trying to win an NBA Finals at the Garden in New York City. There is something that is almost spiritual for tennis players, apparently, about this tournament. And all of a sudden, the guy just fell to the ground and grabbed his pec and had to quit the match from injury, up 2-0 on the world number one, on the verge of the greatest win of his life. And it's the double whammy that hit me. Life isn't fair. You have to go out there and you have to take it, especially in sports. Whether you're Kirk Cousins and $100 million seems to tell you you have... Because look, I feel for Cousins. It's easy for me to sit here, and it's true when I say this, but it's still easy for me to sit here and point out that Kirk Cousins can't win in the playoffs, is not very good in those moments. It was easy when he was in Washington with the then Redskins, right, because it was the Redskins then, now they're the Commanders, not winning playoff games, to go, all right, maybe it's that team. Maybe they're the problem. They were owned by Dan Snyder at the time. They weren't particularly well run. And then, by the way, there's also some irony in Cousins being put out by someone being drafted, because he was drafted in the same draft as RG3, and then took over for him in part because of injuries. But when Cousins went to Minnesota and had success and had a good football team but couldn't win in the playoffs, that reality, that narrative, turned out to be about Kirk Cousins. That's a Cousins problem. And the opportunity to go to Atlanta, to have a relatively easy division, to have what looked like on paper a pretty good team, this was a chance for him to have what everybody wants, to have some success in his career, to shut up people like me, to change the narrative. And he wasn't able to hold on to that job, and they had a ready and waiting person to step in because they did draft someone because they may not have trusted him as much as $100 million indicated that they should have. It's a bummer. It's a bummer for the guy in Wimbledon. It's a bummer for those of us that are trying to figure out this Superman thing. I don't know why I'm so obsessed with this, but I can't. Maybe it's the algorithm. Because have you noticed, Nico, and I'm not trying to be, I can't, I was talking to Ryan Hickey about this. I'm on X a lot for this job, right? It's a good way to consume information. It's a news delivery source. I can't open the X app anymore next to my children because the algorithm, how do I put this? I mean, I don't know what Elon's got, like who he has programming his app. I don't need that smutty. I don't need that stuff. I don't need to be like trying to look up what's going on with NBA free agency and have whatever thing I can't say on a radio show. It's crazy.
I see way too much of that stuff too. So you're right on cue with that. I've noticed too, like if you like a tweet, you'll get like seven tweets in a row about that topic. And it's like, okay, just because I thought one thing was funny or cool doesn't mean I need to see it 10 times.
It's funny you say that because I actually, that answers my question. I did like yesterday a Superman review thing. I'm like, oh, I want to read the reviews tomorrow. Maybe that's why my entire algorithm has been has replaced the X-rated stuff. Oh, it's called X. I never even put this together. Maybe that's why they call it X, because it's X-rated. Anyway, it's replaced it with Superman stuff. It's everywhere. It's on my brain. All right. I want to talk about this. So when we get closer to the NFL season, we're going to go through and we're going to talk about the teams that had the opportunity to pull a 180, to turn last year's debacle into this year's success. And I think I said this earlier in the show. One of the teams that did that last year was the Commanders. I mean, they were outstanding last year, made NFC Championship game, rookie quarterback played great football, all of that stuff. But you also have quarterbacks to do this every year. And last year, because of injury, was supposed to be a backup, the forgotten man, Sam Darnold, walks into Minnesota and has a career year. I mean, there was a point, and he faded a little bit at the end, there was a point where there was a little bit of legitimate talk about him being the MVP last year. That is how well he played under Kevin O'Connell and that Vikings team. He's in Seattle this year. There are a list of guys, I've got six or seven of them, who I think are candidates to be this upcoming season's version of last year's Sam Darnold. And we're going to get into those. All right, good morning on this Tuesday. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for listening. Phone number 888-710-4ISN. Trying to get excited about the All-Star Game. I have a week to be excited about the All-Star Game. I want to be excited about the All-Star Game. Maybe it's just being an adult. When I was younger, I was so into it, Nico. I was, oh. You know what it is? You're too young. The National League, the American League, they play each other now. Some of the it was cool back when you would never, ever see those guys face each other.
Yeah, it's funny. You're not the first person that I've heard say that, and I don't really remember that experience because when I was growing up, we always had interleague play. I think interleague play became a thing in like the late 90s, which was right before I was born. And it's interesting because people in my generation don't care at all about the All-Star Game, but I've always been fascinated to watch like old videos of like previous All-Star Games, and they seem huge.
It mattered. I mean, Pete Rose once, Charlie Hustle, this is before my time, but there's a famous moment where he took out the catcher trying to score in an All-Star Game because, well, in part because Pete Rose was, you know, Pete Rose, but also in part because it had significance. This is the thing, NBA All-Star Game, NFL Pro Bowl, the MLB All-Star Game, the players don't care. If the players don't care, why should we care? One of the most mesmerizing sports moments I've ever seen in my entire life, let alone the most mesmerizing baseball moment outside of Major League Baseball, was in the World Baseball Classic, if I remember the name properly, when Shohei Ohtani faced Mike Trout, his MLB teammate at the time, in the final game of that championship. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And struck him out right on a 3-2 count. I think it got to 3-2.
Yeah, it was an awesome at bat as they were. I think Trout fouled off a couple of pitches.
Yeah.
And Ohtani finally got him.
It was, and this was when, and look, Trout is not the player that he used to be, but it is easy to discard the historical level of dominance and excellence and awesomeness that guy brought every single day. That at the moment, this was probably 3 or 4 years ago. It's for something, you're playing for your country, but it's not a Major League Baseball game, right? Clearly, you can create, if you do it properly, ways that non-MLB games matter to players. And I don't know what the solution is for the All-Star game, but I don't care.
Well,
I used to care. I don't care.
I noticed back in February when the NHL did that Four Nations thing, there were players that were saying how this is like the biggest game they've played in their lives, and like how important than winning a Stanley Cup. And there were actually some fans that were not happy with that, but the players definitely cared about that Four Nations. So I don't want to say that the MLB should steal the NHL's idea, but something similar.
The thing is, do you have enough players from Japan, enough players from Korea, enough players from Cuba or Venezuela to field a competitive team against American players? You do if you go outside Major League Baseball, obviously, right? If you pull from other leagues, but then that's not an MLB event, right? That becomes, because MLB wants to showcase their talent. So it's a soccer comparison, and I'm 4 or 5 years into watching that sport, but they have the same thing. They have their professional team, and then they play for their country a lot in the World Cup, and there's not just World Cup game. They have the USA just lost the Gold Cup, right? It's a random but important event. And it is an interesting thing where players, I get it, are more invested in their country's success than their team success. Not that they're not. Messi, for example, Leo Messi, greatest player of all time. He cared about Barcelona when he played for Barcelona, but it was nothing compared to Argentina. And so you're right, maybe there's a way where you can make Paul Skeens and Shohei Ohtani and whoever else you want to point to for their respective countries be that invested. Also, it would be another this is the other reason that the All-Star game has lost something. Skeens is not going to play meaningful baseball. He's just not in Pittsburgh. He's not going to. I don't even know where are they at now? 33-50. I don't even know what their record is. They're awful. You put him in an All-Star game in 1994 where he's never faced an American League player. And all of a sudden, Skeens against Aaron Judge feels like something, especially because he plays for the Pirates. You know they're never going to play each other in a World Series. That ain't happening ever, at least with that team. So it's just, anyway, it feels like a missed opportunity. So last year, Sam Darnold was I'm going to go through. Last year, Sam Darnold was the breakout, I think, quarterback star in the NFL in terms of a surprise. And look, we've had guys do this before. He's not the first. He won't be the last. Baker Mayfield, it's easy to forget this, but Baker Mayfield, before he arrived in Tampa Bay, was basically trying to salvage his career in Charlotte, in Carolina, and it didn't work. He and Darnold actually were on that team together. It tells you how bad that Carolina staff was in that organization. And Baker goes on to Tampa Bay. When he went to Tampa Bay a few seasons ago, was not a guaranteed starter. And now Baker's, I don't know, top 11, top 10 quarterback? He's a legitimate starter for a team that wins games and wins playoff games. He has a career. He's doing well. Geno Smith, I think, to a degree, had this happen in Seattle a few years ago, where Russell Wilson went away, and it's like, oh, okay, I guess it's Geno, and had a good enough career that the Raiders just gave him some money. So I'm going to give you my list of the guys that I think can break through, can be this upcoming NFL season, Sam Darnold. Career salvation, and I've got one here two we have to do a sort of caveat of what they have a higher threshold. And then, Nico, I'm going to have you pick who you think is going to be the guy. You ready? All right. Drum roll, please. All right. I think the most likely candidate, or maybe not likely, I think the most interesting candidate to be next year's Sam Darnold is actually last year's Sam Darnold. It is Sam Darnold. Because I have very little confidence that he's going to be successful in Seattle. He's coming off an amazing season, but the fact is he doesn't have Kevin O'Connell, who's, I think it's fair to say, an offensive guru, an offensive genius, the head coach in Minnesota. The guy was amazing. But I doubted Darnold last time, and Darnold was a top, what was he, third pick for the Jets when he got drafted? Top three pick. We've seen this before. Situation and opportunity is such a key driver of success. It's just such a, Trevor Lawrence may fail in the National Football League because Urban Meyer was his coach. That is a fact. But because quarterbacks are so important and so expensive, and in such short supply, I think we've entered a phase now in the NFL where guys are going to get more opportunities than they did before. Sam Darnold's are going to get chances. Geno Smith's are going to get chances. Guys, Daniel Jones is on my list. The guy's an Indy. It's a fresh start. It's an opportunity. Maybe he can have some success. The guy on my list that I think I'm most confident about, and maybe it's because I want this to be the case, is Justin Fields. Remember, this dude's on his third team. He had a winning, what was he last year? I can't remember. 4-2 with the Steelers last year. They benched him for Russ. He's going to, on the one hand, a perennially lackluster organization. The Jets have been bad for so long. But he's reunited with Garrett Wilson, who Nico pointed out to me, in a great bit of information. I forgot about this. They were teammates for 2 years in college at Ohio State. And Fields threw, 11 touchdown passes to that guy. There's a connection there. The Jets on – this is why people thought the Jets could be good with Aaron Rodgers. The Jets have a pretty good roster on paper. There are talented players on that football team. And they actually have a real coach, I think, in Aaron Glenn. The thing about Glenn is we don't know until you become a head coach. We just don't know whether you have gotten to your level of incompetence or whether you've finally gotten your opportunity. He has certainly, I think, carried himself in a very professional manner. The way that he booted our guy Aaron Rodgers to the curb, I think, made sense. He's setting standards. So Fields seems to be in a professional football setting for maybe, I don't say the first time in his career. He wasn't in Chicago. He was in Pittsburgh, but Tomlin never trusted him and never let him be him. By the way, speaking of coaches getting an opportunity and a chance, one defensive coordinator is the coach in New York now. The other is obviously the coach of my Chicago Bears. I'm going to put Caleb Williams on this list, Nico, but I think Caleb Williams has to have, I mean, I guess 35 touchdowns to 15 picks and a 67% completion percentage, which was Darnold's stats last year, and 10 or 11 wins, and Caleb, that qualifies. So I'll put Caleb Williams on here. I think he fits.
I think Williams is going to have the highest expectation level of the three or four quarterbacks that you mentioned. Like you said, I mean, he was also a number one overall pick. Now he's got Ben Johnson, who everyone views as this offensive
generational
guru.
Talent in that arm, we think. By the way, I have Aaron Rodgers on this list. But for me, Aaron Rodgers has to, I mean, he already had stats last year. He has to win a playoff game or two. But it would be and maybe it's a little weird to have him on the list. I just think he's not very good anymore. I think he's a loser. And if he wins, and I'm wrong and he's right, and good for him. But that I need to see it. Russell Wilson's on here. I don't believe it for a second. In fact, I think the better question for Russell Wilson is when does he lose his starting job to the Giants to Jameis Winston. But let's put him on the list. And I already mentioned Daniel Jones. Anybody else you want to mention on here who is up for a career? Like, I'm not going with Kenny Pickett. I just don't believe it. Anybody else you want to put on here? Not rookies.
The only one that I thought of would be Geno Smith in Vegas.
Yeah.
Because he was always decent with Seattle,
okay.
But he was never really that good. And now he gets to reunite with Pete Carroll there in Vegas. I'm curious to see how that goes. They just drafted Ashton Jeanty, so a skill position player to help him out. That was one that was interesting to me.
I kind of see him as a poor man's Baker in the sense that I actually hold Geno. If I had to rank the quarterbacks who I think are good enough that I would somewhat rely on, he'd be on the list, but the last name on the list. Like, I have more faith in him than I have in any of the players I just mentioned. Well, other than maybe Caleb. I want to believe in Caleb, but that's my Bears fan talking. For me, I think it's Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields is the most likely guy to have a breakthrough season. And some of that I want to be true. He seems like a really good guy. He's gotten a raw deal. You go 4-2 with the Steelers and you get benched. That's brutal. And the thing is, and I'm not a part of those offensive meetings, right? I'm not the offensive coordinator, but they haven't had a real offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh for a decade. And they didn't let Justin Fields is not a pocket passer in the traditional sense. You have to let him be creative. You have to let him use his athleticism. You have to be a little more innovative, and they wouldn't let him do that. So I just don't think he's been, and that was the problem in Chicago too. So if the Jets let him play to his strength, I think he can be great. It could be Sam Darnold. Who do you like? Who's going to be this year's Sam Darnold?
I don't want to agree with you and go with Justin Fields because that's
boring. You can agree with me.
But I do think that Fields has the best chance. The only thing that scares me is Aaron Glenn. I know you talked about it, the thing that he did with Rodgers, and I'm nervous about him being a first-time head coach. So that's the only thing that would stop me from picking Fields. But I do think that Fields has the talent. We just haven't seen him get a fair opportunity yet in the NFL.
I mean, so I'm with you. By the way, the same thing is true for Ben Johnson. There's no guarantee he's not over his skis. The offensive coordinator for the Jets is a guy who was the Lions passing game coordinator. So it's also very hard to assess whether that guy is also over his skis or is a really bright offensive mind. And this is where it just comes down. It all comes down to Aaron Glenn. Because Aaron Glenn was the defensive coordinator of that organization, was able to assess. What's the guy's name? Tanner Engstrand? I don't know how to say his name. Engstrand? Glenn was able to make evaluations of his offense, his now offensive coordinator, when that guy was the passing coordinator in Detroit. And so it depends how much you trust Glenn. I don't know. Trying to assess a coordinator, especially a defensive coordinator, making the leap to head coach. By the way, I thought Dan Campbell was going to be a disaster. When he did his introductory press conference, I'm going to bite off kneecaps and growl it, rah, people. But there was some magic there you didn't see coming.
Do you think that having a defensive-minded head coach is beneficial for someone like Fields?
I don't think it matters. So I've thought about this over the years. I think it's just who is good at running a football operation, who creates a culture, instills confidence, hires the right people. I think being a head coach is as much about delegation as it is about individual sort of X's and O's excellence, which is why it's hard to be a head coach in the NFL. Those guys don't delegate anything. They're all control freaks. But that's what Belichick was so good at. And then he delegated his heart to Jordan Hudson. I've got a Jordan Hudson reference in there. I love it. All right, let's talk to Tony Gwynn Jr. about some baseball next here on Rather Than You.